Today is Thursday, December 18th, and this is the World Socialist Website. For a united global movement against layoffs in the auto industry. The International Workers' Alliance of Rank and File Committees, or IWARFC, calls on auto workers around the world to join a unified counteroffensive against the escalating bloodbath of layoffs sweeping the global auto industry. The defense of the right to a job requires common action on a world scale against the transnational auto companies. This fight requires the building of new organizational structures, rank-and-file committees, democratically controlled by workers, and based on the independent interests of the working class, not on nationalist collaboration with the capitalist elite. On Friday, over 1,100 workers are expected to have their last day at General Motors Factory Zero in Detroit. The name of the plant, Zero Crashes, Zero Emissions, Zero Congestion, reflected GM's claim that it was the centerpiece of the company's electric vehicle future. Now the plant is to go down to a single shift and could soon be closed altogether. Layoffs are spreading throughout the industry. Ford has announced it will end production of the electric F-150, placing the future of the Rouge Electric Vehicle Center in doubt. Its battery subsidiary, Blue Oval, is firing all 1,800 workers at its plant in Louisville, Kentucky, converting the facility to energy storage production for AI data centers. GM's battery subsidiary, Ultium, is cutting thousands of jobs in Spring Hill, Tennessee, and Lordstown, Ohio. The latter plant had been touted as a replacement for the historic Lordstown assembly plant, which GM shuttered in 2019. The United Auto Workers bureaucracy has said nothing about any of these job cuts. The guilty silence reflects its own role in helping to eliminate thousands of jobs since the phony 2023 stand-up strike. The UAW has also remained silent on dangerous working conditions, including those that led to the death of skilled tradesman Ronald Adams Sr. this April. The only sustained and serious coverage of these developments has come from the World Socialist website and from the IWARFC, which has exposed conditions that the union bureaucracy seeks to conceal. What are the basic principles required for a genuine fight? First, the IWARFC calls on workers to reject all layoffs. We reject the right of the auto companies to profit and insist on the principle that every worker has the right to a job. This is literally a life and death question. Layoffs mean evictions, bankruptcies, the loss of health coverage, family crisis, substance abuse, and deaths of despair. The right to employment must be enforced by workers' control. They must insist on the final say over all questions relating to employment, safety, and production. If production must be reduced, the work week should be reduced with no corresponding decline in paychecks. To prepare for a fight, workers must demand the immediate publication of all future layoff plans currently being concealed by management and their enablers in the UAW and other unions internationally. These plans affect the welfare of society as a whole and cannot be treated as private corporate information. Workers are being made to bear the cost of the irrational and socially destructive implementation of the electric vehicle transition. The technology has the potential to lower transportation costs and reduce carbon emissions, but for the automakers, the attraction lies exclusively in the prospect of lower labor costs and higher profit margins. Second, the fight must be guided by an international strategy that rejects America First, Germany Uber Alles, and other similar slogans that serve only corporate interests. Protectionist tariffs have led to chaos by tearing apart a globally integrated productive process. Led by the United States, a struggle is underway over control of lithium, cobalt, and rare earth elements essential for battery technology, and over access to advanced semiconductor chips. Under U.S. pressure, the Dutch government recently seized control of a Chinese-owned semiconductor firm, prompting retaliatory export bans by China. This logic leads inexorably toward war. Indeed, the new war in Venezuela is motivated by the fact that some 80% of the country's oil exports go to China. The struggle of each against all has produced layoffs worldwide. The German auto industry has cut approximately 50,000 jobs amid a sharp fall in exports, particularly to the United States and China. Automakers internationally have been hit by the ending of EV tax credits under the Trump administration, which is openly arguing for a U.S. exit from the EV market altogether due to the commanding lead of Chinese automakers. Meanwhile, so-called reshoring through punitive tariffs has devastated the Canadian auto industry, producing thousands of layoffs. A central principle in the fight for the international unity of the working class is the defense of immigrant workers, who are the targets of vicious scapegoating by the Trump administration as it oversees massive Gestapo-style raids invading entire communities. Workers must reject the filthy lie promoted by Trump and similar forces internationally that immigrants are to blame for the social crisis produced by the capitalist ruling elites. Third, the fight against management must be inseparably linked to a fight against the union bureaucracy. In every country, the apparatuses of the unions are closing ranks more tightly with their own oligarchs. In Germany, the IG Metall union promotes social partnership with German automakers. In Canada, Unifor is openly aligning with Canadian capitalists against their American rivals. Nowhere is the corrupt relationship between union and management more pronounced than in the United States. The United Auto Workers has helped U.S. automakers destroy over 1 million jobs since 1979 and transform Detroit from the city with the highest standard of living to the poorest big city in America. This is the product of its nationalist and corporatist program, claiming that workers must accept sacrifices in order to keep American companies competitive. UAW President Sean Fain promoted Trump's tariffs as a supposed boon for jobs. But far from saving American jobs, the UAW's trade war strategy is a major factor in the mass layoffs. Meanwhile, they remain silent on the jobs bloodbath within the U.S., with 1.2 million layoffs announced by employers and the economy heading toward recession. The UAW openly supports war. Invoking the mobilization of U.S. industry during World War II, Fain presents a new world war practically as a jobs program, suggesting the conversion of excess industrial capacity to weapons production. His counterparts in Europe support breakneck rearmament programs, the logic of which is direct war between Western Europe and Russia. The UAW treats the layoffs as inevitable and tries to convince workers that there is nothing they can do. In Europe, IG Metall holds symbolic marches and, at best, negotiates for slightly better severance packages, while its top officials collect hundreds of thousands of euros sitting on corporate works councils alongside management. In every country, the union bureaucracy acts to suppress resistance and protect the interests of the corporations. But workers are not powerless. The IWA-RFC is mobilizing the working class as a class, uniting workers across borders to strengthen their position through international solidarity. The trade union bureaucracies divide and conquer, just as Trump and the far right do, whereas the IWA builds unity to fight back. This means developing a global network of rank-and-file committees, affiliated with the IWA-RFC, to organize independent initiatives from below. These committees are based on democratic control by workers themselves, not the dictates of pro-corporate union officials or the parties of the capitalist establishment, whether Democrat, Republican, or their counterparts internationally. Ultimately, the interests of the workers are incompatible with the capitalist profit system. The fight must advance toward the expropriation of the auto industry from private hands, and its transformation into a public utility under workers' democratic control. This is essential not only to protect jobs, wages, and living standards, but also to halt the spiral toward global war between rival capitalist cliques and to place production under rational social control. Social ownership of the auto industry would also enable new technologies, including electric vehicles, to be used for an environmentally sustainable future, not as weapons to bludgeon workers with job cuts and speed up. The time to act is now. Contact the IWA RFC via the World Socialist website, wsws.org, and take the first step in building a unified global movement of the working class in defense of jobs, democratic rights, and the future. European powers set course for escalation of war in Ukraine against Russia, by Johannes Stern. The talks on a supposed peace plan for Ukraine, which took place in Berlin over the past few days, have made one thing clear above all else. The leading European powers, above all Germany, are doing everything they can to prolong NATO's war against Russia and escalate it to a new, even more dangerous level. While German Chancellor Friedrich Merz called the German capital a hub of peace efforts, in reality, it hosted a war summit. Behind closed doors, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, Trump's negotiators Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, and a number of European heads of state and government haggled not over how to end the war, but how to continue it under new conditions. The starting point for the Berlin talks is the deep crisis of the NATO war. After 4 years of bloody fighting, hundreds of thousands of casualties, and millions of refugees, NATO's offensive has reached an impasse. Despite the more than 400 billion euro in Western military and financial aid to Ukraine, Russian troops are advancing slowly but steadily. In Ukraine itself, the regime is crumbling under corruption scandals and the growing war weariness of the population. The Trump administration is responding to this situation with a change of course. The new national security strategy no longer designates Russia as an adversary, but focuses on enforcing naked U.S. interests worldwide and weakening the European Union. Washington is seeking a deal with Moscow that combines territorial concessions from Ukraine with lucrative economic agreements for American corporations. This is precisely what the European powers are opposed to. They do not accuse the fascist Trump of being too aggressive toward Russia, but rather too lenient. Commentaries in Der Spiegel, FAZ, NZZ, the business press, and social democratic think tanks demand that Europe, quote-unquote, emancipate itself from the U.S., become an independent military superpower, and stand up to Russia. This is not a peaceful alternative to American imperialism, but a program of unrestrained European militarism and direct war against nuclear-armed Russia. The Berlin Declaration, adopted by European heads of state and government on Monday evening, sums up this course. It provides for maintaining the Ukrainian army at a permanent level of 800,000 soldiers, even in peacetime. Ukraine, a country with a population of 30 to 35 million, is to maintain the largest military in Europe, heavily armed, highly equipped, and fully integrated into NATO structures. At the same time, the European Declaration and accompanying documents describe the task of a, quote, multinational Ukraine force, unquote, under European leadership, quote, supported by the U.S., unquote. This force is to assist the Ukrainian armed forces in regeneration, securing airspace, and ensuring safe seas, and will, quote, operate within Ukraine, unquote. Europe is thus preparing to deploy its own ground troops in the Ukrainian war zone. something the Kremlin repeatedly describes as a red line, threatening in response military retaliation against NATO countries. This is already being aggressively propagated in the German media. The chairman of Defense Committee, Christian Democratic Union Member of Parliament Rohkamp, has demanded that Germany participate in such a mission with, quote, personnel and material. Social Democratic Parliamentary Group leader Mirsch has declared that, quote, nothing is being ruled out, unquote. The supposed peace negotiations in Berlin have thus served primarily to prepare for the deployment of European troops in a massive long-term rearmament of Ukraine. At the heart of Europe's push are so-called security guarantees for Ukraine. Now that even Zelensky admits NATO membership is not feasible in the foreseeable future, a de facto substitute is to be created, a treaty that mimics Article 5 of the NATO Treaty, the obligation to provide assistance in the event of war, without explicitly linking it to formal NATO membership. The Berlin Declaration speaks of a, quote, legally binding obligation to take measures to restore peace and security, unquote, in the event of a future attack. The next sentence states that these measures could include military intervention, but also intelligence, logistical, economic, or diplomatic support. The back door is deliberately built in to give governments maximum flexibility. Politically, however, the message is clear. An attack on Ukraine, or a provocation that can be interpreted as such, should be considered an attack on Europe and responded to accordingly. Moscow attacked Ukraine, following constant Western provocations, to prevent a further expansion of NATO up to its borders. Berlin, Paris, and London are now not only demanding an 800,000-strong Ukrainian army on Russia's doorstep, but also a European force in Ukraine and alliance guarantees comparable to NATO membership. The European powers are thus preparing something that is completely unacceptable from Russia's point of view. The demands are deliberately worded in such a way as to sabotage any peace agreement and create a permanent war front in Eastern Europe. The aggressiveness and recklessness with which Europe's ruling class is pushing for escalation was demonstrated by NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte in Berlin over the weekend. In a speech during the Ukraine consultations, he declared that Europe had to prepare for a war like the one fought by, quote, our grandfathers and great-grandfathers, unquote, that is, a general, protracted, and extremely costly continental war that inevitably carries with it the danger of an all-consuming Third World War. Rutte said, quote, we must be ready, because at the end of this first quarter of the 21st century, conflicts will no longer be fought from afar. The conflict is on our doorstep. Russia has brought war back to Europe, and we must be prepared for a level of war that our grandparents or great-grandparents experienced. Imagine a conflict that reaches every home, every workplace, destruction, mass mobilization, millions of displaced people, widespread suffering, and extreme losses, unquote. At the same time, the militarization of the entire EU is in full swing. Under the title Defense Readiness 2030, the European Council has adopted a five-year plan that is a blueprint for a European war economy and the militarization of the entire continent. Germany is at the forefront of this drive. The recently adopted 2026 war budget reached a historic record level of over 108 billion euro and is set to rise to over 150 billion euro by 2029. In fact, German imperialism already spends around 5% of GDP on war-related expenditures. Merz has announced that Germany will build the, quote, strongest conventional army in Europe, unquote. In his government statement yesterday, Merz underscored Germany's claim to European supremacy. He declared that the federal government and he personally were, quote, firmly determined that Germany must not become a victim, not an object, of the epochal change currently taking place. He continued, quote, we must not stand by and watch as the world is reorganized. We are not a plaything of the great powers. We want to and must remain an active player that stands up for its interests and values with determination and assertiveness, end quote. In other words, as on the eve of World War II, Germany is preparing to organize Europe in order to assert its economic and geostrategic interests globally against its adversaries. In addition to Russia and China, this includes the United States of America. The German-European escalation of war is taking place against the backdrop of a deep rift in the transatlantic alliance. Trump's national security strategy attacks the European Union head-on, promoting the rise of right-wing extremist parties and announcing that the U.S. will in the future concentrate its resources primarily in Latin America and the Indo-Pacific region. Russia is no longer designated as the main adversary. Instead, Europe should find, quote-unquote, strategic stability with Moscow while Washington pursues its own interests. The reaction of the European ruling class is clear and belligerent. The warmongers in politics and the media are calling for a kind of European Rutley Oath, a reference to the supposed beginning of the Swiss rebellion against the Habsburgs in the 14th century, the establishment of an independent arms industry, the reduction of security dependence on the U.S., the strengthening of patriotic forces, and the aggressive expansion of European influence in the East. In other words, the split in NATO is not leading to a departure from militarism, but to a bitter struggle between rival imperialist blocs seeking to secure their global position by military means. This development finds stark expression in Ukraine. Trump and his emissaries view the country as a commodity, an object for deals with Putin and future special economic zones. The Europeans, in turn, are trying to bring Ukraine under their control as a permanent front line and staging state, militarily, politically, and economically. The issue of frozen Russian central bank assets, around 210 billion euro, most of which is held by Euroclear in Brussels, plays a key role in this. Both the Berlin Declaration and the preparations for the EU summit beginning today aim to convert this money into a reparation loan and use it to finance the war and reconstruction. This is, under international law, an unprecedented act of robbery, and, according to statements by the Kremlin, will meet with, quote, far-reaching consequences, unquote. At the same time, German corporations are preparing to reap huge profits from the destruction of Ukraine. The German government is organizing investor conferences and delegation trips, while arms and construction companies are planning factories and infrastructure projects in the country. Ukraine is becoming a testing ground for new weapon systems, digital warfare, and a hyper-exploited low-wage economy. This is the real content of the grandiose speeches about reconstruction and European responsibility. It is about raw materials, sales markets, profits, and the imperialist redivision of Eastern Europe. Official propaganda cannot hide the fact that this is a third attempt by German imperialism to seize control of Eastern Europe and Eurasia. Already in World War I, control over Ukraine, rich in raw materials and geostrategically central, was one of the declared war aims of the German Empire, alongside the establishment of German hegemony over Central Europe. In World War II, Hitler continued this policy. The conquest of Ukraine played a central role in the war of extermination against the Soviet Union, which led to the Holocaust and cost the lives of at least 27 million Soviet citizens. Today, German imperialism is once again pursuing the goal of removing Ukraine and other states that were once part of the Soviet Union or the Russian Empire from Moscow's sphere of influence and bringing them under the control of the German-dominated European Union. The enormous sums spent on armament, warfare, and defense readiness are squeezed directly out of the social gains of the working class. Across Europe, pensions are being cut, healthcare systems ruined, and public services destroyed to finance tanks, fighter jets, missiles, and drones. At the same time, hundreds of thousands of industrial jobs are being eliminated, while billions flow into the pockets of arms company shareholders. As in the 1930s, rearmament goes hand in hand with the systematic destruction of democratic rights, the repression of opponents of war and the Gaza genocide, the incitement against migrants, the expansion of the police state, and the systematic elevation of fascist forces are expressions of the same development. The ruling class is preparing not only for war abroad, but also for civil war against the working class. The preparation for a third world war, which would be fought with nuclear weapons and destroy civilization itself, is the ultimate expression of the historical crisis of capitalism. But the same contradictions that are driving imperialism toward war are driving the class struggle forward worldwide. Strikes and mass demonstrations in France, Belgium, Italy, Portugal, and other countries against austerity and militarism herald what is to come. However, spontaneous resistance is not enough. The working class cannot support either American or European imperialism. It must not align itself with any of the rival cliques of great powers, all of which are prepared to plunge millions into ruin to defend their profits and geopolitical influence. The Putin regime, which emerged from the restoration of capitalism and the dissolution of the Soviet Union, plays a reactionary role. It relies on war, militarism, and dictatorship to defend the interests of the Russian oligarchy. Under pressure from imperialism, it vacillates between military threats, including the use of nuclear weapons, and submissive begging for a deal. What is needed is the building of an international socialist anti-war movement that links the struggle against war and dictatorship with the struggle against the capitalist system. This means the formation of independent rank-and-file committees in workplaces, schools, and neighborhoods, the international coordination of the struggle against social cuts, militarism, and repression, and the conscious building of a revolutionary leadership in the working class, the Socialist Equality Parties as sections of the International Committee of the Fourth International. Only when the working class takes power and reorganizes the economy on the basis of socialist planning can the enormous resources currently being poured into war and destruction be used to meet human needs and prevent the catastrophe of a third world war. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.